I'm Derek Thompson, longtime writer with The Atlantic magazine on tech, culture, and politics. There is a lot of noise out there, and my goal is to cut through the headlines, loud tweets, and hot takes in my new podcast, Plain English. I'll talk to some of the smartest people I know to give you clear viewpoints and memorable takeaways. Plain English starts November 16th. Listen for free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
To another episode of the Bakari Sellers podcast. Today is a pretty cool and dope show because I get a chance to interview a friend of mine. We go all the way back to the Kamala Harris for president days, Hillary Clinton days, none other. Oh, and her own campaign and race for Secretary of State. None other than my friend, Iowa's finest, Deidre Dejere. How you doing today, homie?
I am fabulous, Bakari. It is another day that we have an opportunity to change the world we live in. So I'm always grateful for that opportunity.
Listen, I say I wake up every morning trying to change the world. It keeps me motivated and going forward because there's a whole hell of a lot of things that need to be changed. I know you so well. My listeners may not. That's why we're doing this at the time we are doing it. So we start each one of our episodes pretty much the same way, which is having our guest walk us through the arc of your career. So walk us through your career arc from finishing Drake, which is a great institution, to your journey as an entrepreneur to now running for governor in 2022.
So I'm originally from Mississippi. I kind of made my own great migration to Iowa after I graduated from high school in Oklahoma. And I started at Drake, very unclear of what I was stepping into, but I felt a sense of connection to Iowa. I was a broadcast news and politics major. And I thought at that time in my life that I wanted to be a political analyst. This was, you know, 04, walking into undergrad. But what I found in my time in Iowa was a sense of community that I had never come to meet before. I mean, Iowans have this innate ability to see the humanity that exists in people, despite party identity. And I saw this even before I started getting involved in politics. And it moved me not only to continue my education at Drake University, but it moved me to stay here. I was able to start a nonprofit when I was an undergrad to help students in the Drake neighborhood who didn't have the school supplies and the services that they needed in order to be their best selves in school. I was able to start a business in undergrad to help other small businesses get started and grow during the course of the recession. This state has just been a tremendous value to me and my path. When we talk about, you know, the saying field of opportunities, this is Iowa. And when I
But you do know the great migration path ain't from Mississippi to Iowa. Iowa is a little off the beaten path, especially for people of color. So talk to me about the diversity that, because I know, as we affectionately call it, Des Moneys in the media industry, when we always land once every 4 years in Iowa. But talk about the diversity and how it's growing and some of the things people may not know about Iowa other than the fried butter and stuff at your fair.
Right. And that's why I called it my own great migration, because there was this calling that I had to this state. There's a woman by the name of Betty Andrews who started an event, which also became a song, called I'll Make Me a World in Iowa. I had that opportunity as an undergraduate student. And, you know, we at that time, I think, were probably about 95% white when I came to Iowa. Now we're about 90% white. But the diversity that exists in this state is unmatched from my vantage point, because it's intense. You know, the cultural diversity that you are able to experience, that anybody is able to experience in this state, it is unique, it's valuable, it adds to the footprint of who I am, of who this state is. And from my vantage point, I couldn't walk away from that. You know, we don't have the most Black people in the country. We don't have the most Latinx in the country. But the fabric of our diversity that exists is so valuable. And I feel a great sense of calling to this state to not only add value to Iowans in general, but those specific pockets of people, including people of color, who don't necessarily get the value that I was able to get out of Iowa. And I want to connect them to that opportunity. And it's just, it's an exciting place to be. I mean, if you are ever outside of the state and you want to come to Iowa, come during the summertime, because you just get a convergence of the cultural diversity, the economic diversity that exists throughout the state. And you know, it's one of the reasons why people stay. And it's not just the diversity, right? It's all of the other opportunities to come after that. You know, considering, and I know we'll talk about this, but there's a lot of challenges that Iowans are facing. But when I started this conversation tour about a few months ago, I asked Iowans two questions. I was in rural Iowa, I was in urban Iowa, I was in suburban Iowa, and I asked them, you know, very specific questions. Why do you live here? People value their communities. I asked them, why don't you live anywhere else? They love the sense of community. They love being connected to their neighbor. They love being able to go next door and have a conversation with someone. It's just this, like I said, the ability to see the humanity in folks, it's just thriving throughout the entire state.
So why did you choose to run for governor this go around?
So why I chose
it to kinda run for came, governor? It kind of came. Now, I'm a ride or die with you, but it came out of the blue. I didn't know this was next on your list or to do things. Yeah. You kept this one under wraps. So tell me why governor this go around?
You know, it was a surprise to me. You know, I'm not one of those individuals that has this complete and total plan for life. You know, I was raised in a household where my parents taught me early on that I was born on this earth to serve. I had value that existed in me, and my job while I was on this earth was to put that value out to help somebody else and make their lives better. And so when I think about the Iowa that I got connected to, the Iowa that I got introduced to when I was a college student, and I see the Iowa that exists now, I am of the mindset that we can do better than where we are now. Mind you, I come from states where we suffer in education, the state of Mississippi. You know, Iowa was number one in education. That's how I got introduced to this state. I don't know if anybody else has ever took the Iowa basic skills test, but that was my first connection to the state of Iowa. Now we're like 21 on the list, right? And so as I'm seeing the state take steps backwards, I'm of the mindset that we can interrupt this backwards trajectory. And if we are to interrupt it, if we are to put people first and do good for everybody, then we start in that governor's office. You know, when we think about everything that the federal government is trying to do related to voting rights, related to COVID, they're trying to fix the mistakes that states are making, and Iowa is one of them. And so I want to interrupt this cycle and push us forward, push us to a place in which we belong, what we're capable of doing. I mean, this is a state that feeds the world. You know, we fuel this country. There's so much value that we've offered to this country for years and years, 100 years before Brown versus Board of Education. This state had desegregated schools. It recognized the value and the importance of education to everyday students, to all students, right? And so I want to make sure that we get back to seeing the humanity. You know, there's been a great deal that has set us apart. You know, we have a governor that's pitting us against one another, and that's not the way we have to be. You know, there's this mindset, you got to rob Peter to pay Paul. No, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in that. I think you just got to make sure Paul is good, Peter is good, and Paula is good. And I think you can do that in the governor's office. I believe strongly you can do that in the governor's office if given that leadership who's willing to make that happen.
Can Kim Reynolds run again?
Yes, she can run again. We don't have term limits in the state of Iowa.
Oh, Lord, I need to get rid of some
folks. We do not have term limits in the state of Iowa. You know, she came on after our former governor got
ambassadorship
from Trump.
Yes, sir.
To be ambassador to China. And so she came on shortly after 16 and ran her first race in 18. And, you know, skated by with 50.3% of the vote. And, you know, she's vulnerable. And we know that she's ranked 41st in popularity amongst governors across the country. And so, you know, long story short, I'm running because I believe in the state, Bakari. I believe in what we're capable of. And I sure enough believe in myself. And so
if I can
align these two beliefs, let's make this happen.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you ran for Secretary of State in 2018. And as someone who also ran unsuccessfully statewide, trust me, I don't even like talking about it. So we're not going to spend too much time on this question. Mm-hmm. I know I came out of that experience a far better person and candidate. Talk to me about what you learned in 2018 and how that shapes your campaign this go around.
Oh, man, there were so many lessons learned out of 2018. I was a candidate for the first time. People didn't know me from Adam. You know, I think I had 9% name ID, and I was running up against an individual in the primary that had run for Congress twice in the state of Iowa. It was unsuccessful, but, you know, had spent a great deal of money. And so no one thought I could win, right? The primary, let alone the general. And we were able to get through that primary because we connected with as many people as we possibly could. We didn't just go to the, quote, reliable voters, you know, someone who cares very deeply about the voting process. We went to eligible voters in this state who have a stake in this election, which is every voter in this state. And that was a tremendous lesson learned that, you know, because typically in primaries, they say, go to your reliable voters, go to the people who voted in the past election. No, because we have too many roadblocks that inhibit people's ability to get to the polling place. But given the opportunity to connect with me, you know, it expanded our approach. I mean, we were able to do a lot more with half the money that we had intended. We wanted to raise $1 million. We raised $500,000. And we were able, with half of the money, we were able to get 70,000 more votes than the previous Secretary of State candidate with those who had those resources. So that was a lesson learned. You connect to as many voters as you possibly can. And that starts with a grassroots network that believes in what's possible, that is connected with your values. And I'm taking that with me. The other thing that I'm taking with me is a lesson learned is those counties where I need to do a better job, where I need to do a stronger job. Meeting people where they are. You know, I'm that candidate that goes to Sell Barnes in rural Iowa. I'm that candidate that goes to churches. I'm that candidate that goes to small businesses and connects with people in any space that I possibly can to get people out to vote. And so now I know I need to do more of that throughout the state. And the biggest lesson learned, and I think that Democrats throughout the entire country saw this lesson. Some of us are trying to figure out how to make it work in our state. Us as Democrats have to operate as a team. You know, we're going to have a Senate candidate, a federal candidate on the ticket. We're going to have congressional candidates on that ticket. And it's ever more important for us, especially in states like Iowa, where, you know, the margin of victory is small and the registration differences between independents, Democrats and Republicans is small as well. We've got to dig deep and we've got to show people that Democrats believe in the state and we're worth fighting for. And we have to do that as a team. So those are the three big lessons learned. Had I have not run for Secretary of State, I would not be in a position right now to be running for this office.
No, of course not. Let me ask you this. Here's the obvious question. Trump won Iowa by about 8 or 9 percentage points. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden has a 33% approval rating in Iowa. You saw what happened in Virginia with Terry McAuliffe and how the national narrative around Democrats affected his race. How do you intend to run a race that focuses on Iowans and Iowans issues that blocks out the national noise around the Democratic brand?
You know, we've had a state that is, you know, elected a Democratic president and then turned around and elected a Republican governor. I think Iowans have this ability to kind of parse out the extra they don't like. For our races to be nationalized to some degree, unless it is a national race. But the way that you pit through that, there's a couple of different ways. And one thing I'll say is just around organization. We are going to allow the Republicans to be their authentic selves in this race. They outnumber Democrats by, I think, about 30,000 registrations. Independents outnumber Democrats by about 15,000 or so registrations. We have enough Democrats and independents in this state to actually make this win happen. We actually have the individuals in this state that we can connect to, that we don't have to bother with the persuasion and ideological of differences. And so we're going to do better with independents. 45% of independents showed up in 2018. You know, and I know we can do better there because about 60% of them showed up in 2020. And so we also didn't do as well amongst our 24 to 35 year old age demographics. Less than half of them showed up. These are people who showed up for Obama, who were grassroots organizers and neighborhood team leaders for Obama. We're going to do better there. So I'm not really moved by the fact that the Trump was able to pull out in 2020, because, you know, we also selected Obama, you know, 4 years prior and in 2008. And so I think Iowans know the state of which our state is in right now and the challenges, but we've also got to do the work in letting people know who don't know the harm that this current administration has caused, because they see it, they feel it, they understand it. It's just a matter of letting them know that they're not alone. and what they're seeing and what they're experiencing.
Why do you think Democrats in Washington are running into this disconnect where the things they're doing, they poll well? I mean, that's mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. But when it comes to approval ratings, right track, wrong track, and generic ballots, they aren't polling well. What's the disconnect? And how do good campaigns in 2022 repair the disconnect so people can actually feel the benefit of many of these policies that we all support?
So a big disconnect that I've seen in our community is that people have this mentality of, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to do what's good for you. You know, in this state, and I'm sure that it happens in other states, especially in our rural communities and in our urban communities, they know what's good for them. They know what can help their communities move forward. They know the stumbling blocks and the hurdles. The problem, the disconnect that we've had is that we have not done the due diligence to bring those voices to the problem-solving tables. If 2020 taught us anything, is that we are better and when we put our heads together and we resolve the challenges cohesively and collectively, because we're able to see different vantage points, we're able to point out the unintended consequences of our decision-making, and we're also able to influence and impact more people. The disconnect is meeting people where they are, not telling them what's good for them, not giving them an analysis of their current situation, but listening to their concerns, listening to their issues, and aligning with their values.
So, you know, one of the things that I'm concerned about in 2022, and I think it's going to bear out, is an enthusiasm gap. What do you think Democratic voters in Iowa need to see to get off of the couch in 2022? Because there clearly is that gap on the Democratic side. And what are Democratic voters in places like Iowa feeling, and how is your campaign being responsive to them?
You know, people want to connect with the team that believes in them and that they believe in. And I don't think you can get people to believe in you at this point in time in 2021 as a candidate if you do not sincerely believe in their capability. This is not a hero or shero scenario in this campaign for governor. This is coming to terms with the facts of what people are dealing with and putting solutions to those challenges that people are facing. That's what's getting people's attention. You know, I'm going to counties where I couldn't get, 200 people to turn out in Lee County in 2018. That just wasn't happening. But I think people have an overwhelming sense of we can do something about this, that we are not that far gone. The enthusiasm comes from reminding people of what they're capable of. Bakari, in this state, we're overachievers in Iowa. I'm just going to say that. And when we don't get all the wins that we want as Democrats, sometimes, we walk around with our tail between our legs because we believe that we can do better. And so I'm of the mindset right now, and what my campaign is doing is reminding Iowans of what they're capable of historically and in the present day. And that gets people riled up, because if you look at the national media, sometimes it looks like they're counting Iowa out, that we're not of value, right? And we know we have that value. We know we can contribute to this worldwide economy, this economy that exists in this country, and we can do better for our economy in the state of Iowa. You know, like in my county, Bakari, Blacks make $30,000 less as a household than the entire county. Yeah. You know, Blacks own their homes, 30% of Blacks own their homes, compared to 70% of all of our county.
That's not an Iowa problem, but I do feel you.
Yeah. And you're right. We're seeing that across the entire country. But I want to do something about it here. As we're getting these federal resources in, talk about Build Back Better. When we're getting these federal resources in, we need somebody in this state that knows what to do with those resources. We got a governor that sends money back.
Let me ask you this, though.
$97 million.
You mentioned Build Back Better and transportation. And while that's the conversation in D.C., and rightfully so in many of your Sunday news shows, I get a feeling that this election cycle in 2022 will be about gas prices and groceries. How can a governor speak to these specific concerns around inflation that we know that we see every single day?
So it's going to be about gas prices. It's going to be about groceries. It's also going to be about childcare. Yeah. In this state, it's also going to be about education. You know, in Iowa, we care a great deal about educating our students. And right now we see our students leaving, vowing never to come back. And so I'm going to give them that vision of what this state can look like. You know, this state will be a state that's truly funding education and preparing our students for either college or job after they graduate from high school. We can do better there. You know, what's going to connect with voters is what's coming in their pockets. I mean, you know, this was the scene of the UAW strike with John Deere. And there were a number of different types of people who were on the picket line. And I walked with them in three different parts of our state. And you saw, I saw a grandfather walking with his granddaughter. He worked for John Deere. She worked for John Deere. He said, I'm on this line right now because I want to make sure she has a better future. I met a guy who said he works for John Deere. He's 22 years old. This is the second job that he works because his dad was able to make a good living for him and his family. And he wants to be able to do that for his family. Folks just want to be able to work, provide for their families, and be able to do what they want to do in their communities. That life, that liberty, and that pursuit of happiness. That's what Iowans want right now. And my message to them is that we can have this. We can have this if we reprioritize how we spend our money in this state and we spend the federal resources that we're getting in a very smart way with very few intended consequences to the regular everyday individual.
So look, I got just a couple more questions. First, I mean, probably most important, how can people support your campaign? What are some of the things you need? What can they do?
So the biggest thing right now, we know that campaigns take resources. They can go to DejearForIowa.com. It's DejearIowa. They can follow me on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, share our things. I mean, social media advocacy is incredibly valuable. And the more that people can talk about what's happening in this state, the better. And then again, give money, because these campaigns take resources. I'm running statewide, and I know there's a lot of attention, like I said earlier, on what's happening with the federal government. But we've got to make sure that we're doing our due diligence. We can walk parallel paths, right? We can focus on the federal government, and we can also focus on what's happening stateside. And we've got to secure these offices on the state side so that we can do better for everybody federally. But those are the two ways.
Tell me this. I mean, it's you, Tish James, Sherry Beasley running for United States Senate, Val Demings running for United States Senate, Stacey Abrams, governor, maybe. Mm-hmm. You have all of these Black women running. What does that feel like? I mean, it's one thing to run. It's another thing to be successful and pull it off. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about the challenges and what you look forward to as being part of this new wave of Black women who are running for office.
You know, we've never had a Black female governor in this country, and we've had very few Black female senators in this country. But what the landscape of women who are running for office, not only for these statewides and these federal offices, but city council and school board. I mean, we saw a tremendous number of people of color running for these roles. It is a testament to what this country is actually capable of. You know, running for elected office and being an elected official is a point of privilege because you get an opportunity to serve people. And to see that people of color, Black women, are signing up to serve people in this way is endearing, but it is also motivating to know that you're not alone, that I'm not alone in believing that my state can be a better place for everybody. I'm not alone in that. And that feels good.
Well, you know, look, I love Iowa, but my last question for y'all is, did y'all ever fix the caucus from 2020? And help me understand why you all should be first, because in South Carolina, I need to know the answer to this. Why should y'all be first when y'all are still counting votes for 2020?
I'd like just a little bit of grace in 2020. And the reason why I say that is because first of all, I'll just say this. I love what the caucuses does for politics. It is a community building activity that's essentially on steroids, where people get to sit down, talk about policy, talk about issues in the most granular way. It is not to be compared to a primary from my vantage point. But what we sought out to do in 2020 was expand our opportunity to connect with individuals. And so we offered a virtual and a phone in a course of action for people to actually participate in the caucuses that weren't in person. And we've never done that before. But the idea behind that was to do better, to expand our outreach and get more voices to the table in this community building
So activity. How y'all gonna count? But I hear about community building, but y'all sure didn't count the votes quick enough.
You know, I just think that this was a virtual environment where we were pioneers, because this was a virtual environment where everybody didn't know how to use Zoom. Some people didn't even know what Zoom was.
Fair enough.
WebEx and all those things. So what I say to everybody as we try to overcome a great deal of challenges in a state that is 45th in the nation in broadband speed, mind you, when we tried to overcome those challenges, people learned from our lessons. And so I'm like, don't count Iowa out, because again, we've done a great deal to the fabric of this country by adding value as a state. And I just want people to remember that. I think that was a bold move for us to do a virtual caucus and to offer that option. But it was a very technical move. I guarantee you, we do that today. It doesn't look like it looked then, because this entire state has gotten hit to the fact of doing things virtually. And I think that's going to advance us in the future.
Well, I'm with you. You know, I'm always rocking with you, Deidre Jagir. Thank you for joining the Bakari Sellers podcast. Shout out to your entire team. I hope people go learn your story, donate a few dollars. You are one of the baddest people, not just women, but people running for office. And I appreciate you so much. So thank you for joining the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And I just want everybody to remember, we can do this because we can do our things.
All right. I love you. Be easy. Okay.